This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What would you like to get off your chest right now? Are you feeling lonely, unappreciated, or misunderstood? When you keep these feelings bottled up, they can affect you negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and work through whatever is weighing you down. It's a great way to increase your self-awareness, change negative thought patterns, and more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/beherenow.
Welcome to the Rerooted Podcast with Francesca Maxime, trauma-sensitive mindfulness meditation teacher and poet. Together, we'll take a closer look at approaches to transforming trauma with insights from psychology, neuroscience, spirituality, social justice, and the creative arts. Join Francesca and her guests for an exploration of our shared connection and how we can cultivate greater compassion for ourselves and for others. If you'd like to support Francesca and the Rerooted Podcast, please visit BeHereNowNetwork.com/Francesca.
Hi, everybody. I'm Francesca Maxime. Thank you so much for joining us for this edition of Rerooted, where we really invite us to go back, dig deep, dig down to that which is already tethered to the earth, is of the earth, is right here with us all the time, and that we are connected to it and to one another, whether we like it or not. And so we are just rerooting into that sense of our inner connection and into our own inner wisdom and well-being. And I just want to say also that as the day of this taping is April 4th, 2019, this is the anniversary of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's assassination. And that's relevant always, but particularly in these times, but also for the conversation I think that we're going to be having today with my friend from Minneapolis, Resmaa Menakem. He is the author of My Grandmother's Hands, Racialized Trauma and the Pathway to Mending Our Hearts and Our Bodies, as well as two other books, which I'm sure he can tell you about as well. I'm just going to give you a little bit more information about Resmaa. He is an MSWLICSWNSEP. For those who aren't therapists, he's a social worker, a psychotherapist, and a somatic experiencing practitioner, as I am, the latter, not the former. He's appeared on both The Oprah Winfrey Show and Dr. Phil, an expert on conflict and violence. He served as director of counseling services for the Tubman Family Alliance, as behavioral health director for African American Family Services in Minneapolis, as a domestic violence counselor for Wilder Foundation, and as a certified military and family life consultant for the U.S. Armed Forces, as a trauma consultant for the Minneapolis Public Schools, a cultural somatics consultant for the Minneapolis Police Department, and a community care counselor, and many, many more credentials, which I could get into, but I would rather just talk directly with and have him talk to you. So welcome, and thank you for joining us on Rerooted.
Thank you, sis. It's good to be with you. It really is. May the ancestors guide what I say to you as well as what you say back to me.
I love that. And I love how we're beginning with this real sort of nod and an affirmation of that. And ancestors, I always like to say that, you know, on the land that I'm on right now, this is not my land, and I'm not in Brooklyn, and that's sort of made up. Absolutely. That this is the land of the earth, and I'm on Lenape land. The indigenous folks who are here, that are still here, some, that this is a nod to understanding that there was a systemic removal, a genocide of these beautiful people who were here, and that that this has happened and continues to happen to many communities, particularly of color. And so just also laying that there as we begin our conversation.
Yes. Thank you for doing that. I when I do my workshops, I do that also because I think it's really important in any type of trauma work, and you know this from your practice, one of the most important things is orienting and context and helping traumatized body and helping bodies understand context, the current context and the current orientation. many times that's not where people are oriented to. And so I think for you to say that, I just want to say thank you for saying that, because it's important that as we start that people understand what our orientation is.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And so let's begin maybe the conversation around, I mean, we can do it any way you want, right? Whatever way we flow, so to speak, around the idea of trauma, personal trauma, systemic trauma, generalized trauma. And this idea that you bring up in your e-courses, you have a free e-course, and then you have another one that's more extensive, that's under $100, which is, you know, possible for a lot of people. And I'm sure that for those who it's not so possible, there might be another way to work with that.
Yes, absolutely.
And that that these are about understanding things, for example, like Black body trauma and white body trauma. So maybe you can start exploring some of that, or however you want to begin. I open it to you.
So I think one of the most important things is to start with just a basic definition. And my basic definition of trauma is anything that happens too much, too fast, too soon, coupled with something that should have happened that didn't. And so if I'm brutalized, or if I'm hurt, or if I'm raped, and I can't extricate myself from it, either because I'm too small, or either because I don't have enough strength, or either because there's a psychological component to keeping me in place, then what can happen is that I can actually like create a way of leaving, right? And that's it's a protective, it's not a defective strategy, but it's my way of saying, if my body is going to be put upon in ways that I'm not comfortable with, then I can't be here when that happens. I got to leave. And so if I'm being beat or brutalized or raped, I can't be there. Now, at the same time that brutality happens, the other thing happens also, which is somebody should have helped me. Somebody should have reached out. Somebody should have looked out for me. Somebody should have rendered aid. And when that happens, many times what happens is that people override in order to get through it. And what we know about trauma is that trauma over time decontextualizes trauma. So over time, what the strategies can look like personality in a person, they can look like family traits in a family, or they can look like culture in a people. And this is why it's so important to begin to look at racialized trauma and the things that are coupled with it, is because there has been a lot of trauma built around the concept of white body supremacy, around that the white body is the standard of humanity. And if we don't begin to kind of look at that and unhook it, we'll just keep replicating it. And so just to start out with, I, you know, in terms of orientation, I really try and let people know that my orientation with regard to trauma is the too much, too fast, too soon, coupled with what should have happened that did.
Right. Beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And on a micro level, on a personal level, on an individual body level, we certainly know that can apply to someone who, for example, was in a car accident, who didn't get the kind of attention that they needed, which is
That's
an experience that is traumatic and certainly unfortunate and all of that. But what we're going to get into and unpack a little bit more today, because I have had some conversations around the other example that I just described, is a little bit more about how this applies to, as you say, also as a people.
Yeah.
Excuse me, as a people.
Yeah. So there's a theory that I have that I call the HIPP theory, HIPP. And it is like when I'm working with a body, I'm working with the historical aspects, I'm working with the intergenerational aspects, I'm working with the persistent institutional aspects, as well as the personal aspects. And for me, all of those things get coupled together. And so so many times, especially when you're looking at real kind of like chronic types of expressions of trauma, many times the reason why people can't articulate it, or and why sometimes the talk therapy is not adequate is because sometimes what they're dealing with is the pass through. They're dealing with what got passed down from their mother's nervous system, got decontextualized, and by the time it gets to me, I have a sense of it, but no way to articulate, right? And so many times those couplings, the overcouplings of protection and then the undercouplings of resource, those things all get coupled with the hip stuff. And it's really hard for people to, quote unquote, think their way through it. In this society, we lean so heavily towards logic and thinking as the way to healing. And many times that's a rabbit hole. That's a domain that will keep you moving through these catacombs that you won't be able to get out. And so that's why I talk a lot about the hip theory, that some of the energy, the thwarted energy that's showing up, may not necessarily be your energy, but it's showing up in your body. And so when I'm working with people of color, many times that energy gets what I call decontextualized, internalized white body supremacy. So we internalize these ideas and these standards around the right white body, and then it gets coupled with our own personal peace, it gets coupled with all of this stuff. And and people start to turn the defect as something's wrong with me. Not what happened, but something is wrong with me and wrong with my people and wrong with Black people and wrong with Latino people and wrong with Native people. And you see what I mean? And so part of my work is really about how do I help those bodies unhook those things enough. And that's part of why I wrote the book, is unhook those things enough to where there's enough space and enough room so they can begin to come together with other people that have enough space and have enough room and create culture to unwind some of this. So
beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah.
I really appreciate what you're saying, and the unwinding is again, I think really a nod to what the roots of mindfulness as its original Eastern practices, mm-hmm. From, you know, the Buddha 2,500 years ago when he sort of came to this, which many cultures, many ancient wisdom traditions have sort of pointed to for a very long time, is what you already are, what you already have, what's innate within you is that which we are just sort of trying to let shine. So all these other things that have been obscuring that have been put on, whether it's a story or a narrative or a particular experience or a diagnosis or, you know, any of those things, that they can, you know, they're sort of the clouds in front of the sun, so to speak, but that you're unwinding, you're unearthing, you are sort of parting to get back to that which is right there underneath it all. Maybe layers of shale down, but it's still kind of right there.
Yeah. It's the many times. How do I want to say it? So in this society, we have such a genuflect to individualism, right? We have such a genuflect to bootstraps, do it by myself, blah 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 blah. Many of the brutalities that have happened to us didn't happen to us individually. They happen to a community. They happen to a people. So while individual self-discovery and mindfulness and all that stuff can be important individually, it is inadequate for what we're contending with. It is not enough. And so if we're not about the work of also as healers, if we're not about the work as also helping and not co-opting, but bringing things to the field that will allow people to create and co-create culture that can actually, and reclaim culture that can actually heal some of this stuff. Because we're no individual therapist is going to be able to heal this type of brutality. this is going to take, I always tell people that I'm training, this is going to take at least 9 generations. The type of work, it's not the enlightenment work. People can get enlightened about, you know, people can get enlightened from one moment to the next. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about mindfulness from one moment to the next. I'm talking about how to co-create a culture that is built on real uprooting in the body and in the field of the white body being the standard, right? And for me, there's this thing that I call the 5 brutalities, right? And you spoke to some of it earlier, right? One of the 5 brutalities is imperialism, colonialism, land theft, genocide, and enslavement. Those 5 brutalities, if we don't contend with the requisite trauma that those 5 brutalities have heaped on bodies, not just a historical, like a date this happened or a date that happened, but what actually happens when you watch somebody being whipped? Like, what actually happens to the body that's witnessing that? What happens to a white body where you're 10 years old and your dad takes you to a lynching of 5 Black men in Duluth, Minnesota, where 15,000 white bodies show up to sanction this brutality? What happens to the body when you smell that, when you see that, when the sanctioning is happening? What gets passed down to you that becomes decontextualized culture? And so if we don't begin to grapple with that as healers, right, then if our ethic or our ethos is all bodies are the same, let's just, you know, invite people to bring into this time. If that is our move, don't touch people of color. Don't put your hands on them. Don't do it, because you don't know what you're working with. That when this stuff starts coming up, you will frame it in a way that is not helpful and will keep them locked in to the horror. And so part of my work is really helping us as healers understand that there's a whole lot of work that we got to start doing. And this is what I appreciate about what you're trying to do, is you're trying to say, look, there are these things that are out here in the larger field of healers that we have yet to grapple with, right? That's what I appreciate about what you're doing, right? It's because if we don't grapple with this, we're locking people in, and then we lock it in under the guise of healing. That is such a horrible thing to do to a body. And anybody who's watching us and they say, well, you know, that's not that important. That's an addendum. Nah. This work has to be woven into everything that you do. You have to understand that if what you're about is healing.
I am so grateful for what you're saying and appreciate the praise or compliment also, but really.
It's important. What you're doing is important.
Well, I appreciate that. And I do feel that it is important. And the fact that I'm in a position of privilege to be able to do it and share it is something that I'm grateful for. And I'm grateful for folks like you who are doing the work that then I can share it with a larger audience also. And I say that because I would not have been, to use a word popularized perhaps by millennials, I would not have been woke to these aspects of my own blind spots had I not been invited by my teacher, Jack Kornfield, to really look at what is going on with issues of systemic racism and oppression and its continuation. And how does that apply to not only the world at large, but to these spaces, mindfulness communities, communities of, as you say, healing, and where do we begin to do this work? So sort of taking a stab in the dark. I just sort of started with these conversations, but here we are.
That's right. Right. Can I ask you a question? If you
yes,
I know you're supposed to be asking me a question.
No, I do not mind at all.
Yeah. So, when you're like in the spaces that you're in, obviously our shades are different, right? Do you think you hear things that probably I wouldn't hear?
Yes, and I also think you hear things I wouldn't hear.
Well, I mean, hear things I'm talking about in terms of what people are communicating.
Do you mean, am I privileged to hear things and be privy to insider sort of like, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I do.
So here's a question that I have. What things do you think are important for us as healers to know that maybe, let me say this specifically, what things should I know as a healer of color that I probably would not have privilege to hearing?
Ooh, you put me on
I
the spot.
But I should know.
You put me on the spot, but that's okay.
And
I'm going to walk it back a half a step to just say, you know, we don't know what we don't know, right? So maybe I'm hearing things that I'm, you know, I would suspect yes to, you know, answer to your initial question, and I'll keep, holding that. But at the same time, I can't say that I have been in the hallowed halls of such and such, you know, with deep conversation around these issues at such a level that maybe you're looking for. This is what I hear when I'm talking to folks who are in these healing spaces, whether they're specifically spiritual teachers, whether they're healing, you know, community teachers, therapists, and stuff like that, with a more secular lens or whatnot. I feel all trauma work is sacred work, whether it's macro, whether it's racial, whether it's systemic, whether it's oppression, whether it's individual or whatever. I feel like it's all sacred work that I feel privileged to do, and I know you do also. Mm-hmm. And I guess what I'm hearing is a lot of talk around, we need to do something about diversity and inclusion. I feel bad. I know I didn't create this problem. I know we need to do something about it. So in there, I hear a lot of helplessness or shame or confusion or uncertainty or those kinds of things. Again, well-intentioned, folks who want to begin to explore this. Then I hear, well, we need to create a training around this. We need to create our own, version of this. And then my response to that is, well, is that really necessary? There's lots of stuff out there. Sure, it's been kept out of traditional history books, and sure, you're not going to learn it during Black History Month in February, and sure, you're not going to understand if you are someone with white skin privilege or light skin privilege, even, or socioeconomic privilege around these issues. You're not going to understand it from those sources. I know I didn't. And I mean, frankly, I'll disclose this piece. I went to Harvard. I went to private school when I was a kid and then to public school. These were not things that I learned growing up with my Italian-American family in Massachusetts, who were very social justice oriented. Mm-hmm. And also, I feel, have blind spots around white skin privilege.
Yeah.
As much as they reached out to folks in communities of color and really did do a lot of great policy work. So going back to your question, what do folks who are in positions of power and privilege, who are in these healing spaces, what is it that they are telling me, or what is it that I am hearing? And I'm hearing in some ways some we need to do or we should be doing.
Right.
I'm not hearing, which I think is equally important.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take Dr. Joy DeGruy's course on historic trauma and racism, which is a 10-week course you can take online that talks about things like Otabenga, who is a man who was literally put in the monkey cage here in New York City and then shot himself when he was released because it was so dehumanizing to his humanity. What I don't hear is white skin privileged folks talking about Linnaeus and other folks who created categories of race that didn't exist. What I don't hear them talking about is the fact that they created a name for the mother of us all, the skeleton that was found, that they've named, that folks have named Lucy, but who was given an African name when she was discovered, and that all of our roots go back to her. I don't hear folks wanting to do that work. And those who I've sat in spaces with white skin privilege around these issues, these are spiritual communities. As someone with light skin privilege, I there's a lot of shame and there's a lot of retraction. And that's okay. And so, like, as you know, as a somatic experiencing practitioner, we're holding this and we're creating and widening our window of tolerance. This is all sort of discomfort tolerance, if you ask me, and grief work, and grief work, personal and larger, right? Yeah. And once we kind of do that work together, then we can move through it and come out the other side. And as I was saying to you earlier, Game of Thrones is going to start soon. We become Valyrian steel. We all do. And then we can start the, you know, fighting off the White Walkers or whatever they are. You know what I'm saying? Like that's who we become.
You know, I don't even know if you know what you just said. We can start fighting off the White Walkers, but anyway,
well, isn't that the name of them? It could be a double entendre, which I'm not going there. You could go there, but I'm just saying that's what Game of Thrones calls it, right?
That's right.
So I'm just using the metaphor. Right. But as communities, we can do this, not just as communities of color. I'm talking about folks with white skin and light skin privilege. The main piece here is that Ruth King, who's a Dharma teacher, a mindfulness teacher, talks about racial affinity groups and examining the concept of whiteness as a race and what does it mean to share in this white body trauma. So that's the work that I would invite folks who are doing these trauma healing practices from a psychotherapeutic angle to do, is don't create a curriculum. Study the history that's here. There are plenty of places where you can do that and learn how to be a partner and an ally in different ways.
Absolutely. I think, can I tell you, so that it's really beautiful what you just said. I think that, you know, so I've been doing some workshops with Robin DiAngelo. She's a friend of mine. And I'm actually flying out in June, flying out to Seattle to do, me and her are going to do some work together. And so she came to town a couple weeks ago and we were talking. And one of the things, and have you ever met Robin?
I've not met her, although I've read her work.
Yeah. If you ever get a chance to interview her, you will, Robin is very, when it comes to this stuff, Robin is very gangster with it. I mean, she's like, she gonna put it right, especially with white folks, right? She gonna put it right where they can get it. Now they can decide they can get it or not, but she gonna put it out there, right? And so I was talking with her, we were eating dinner, and she went on this, started talking to me about this idea of white people thinking that niceness is the answer. That as long as they're nice, and as long as they are, they are not brutalizing you at that current time, then that is the answer to white body supremacy, right? Then that is the answer to everything, and that is the first dodge. That is the first kind of rabbit hole, racial dodge that many white people use. You know, I'm nice, or my people are not, or I haven't. I marched with Dr. King, or I did this, or I'm married to a black man, or I'm married to this, or they start coming up with these racial resume points to, but that never allows them to go through what I call the suffering's edge. There is no heat. There's no heat and no energy in comfort. And this whole structure is built around white comfort. The only heat and energy is in the edge of leaning into the suffering of not being aware that there is a structure that is built on you and that white body being the standard of human, right? And then everything else is the deviation from that standard all the way till you get to the black body. This is not a structure I created. This is the structure that was created to keep people in power in place. That there is these racial hierarchies that were created, where the juxtaposition of humanness was the supreme humanness is the white body. The antithesis of that, i.e., not a, remember the race question originally started off, I believe, is interwoven with the species question, right? That
the species.
The species question, right? Mm-hmm. Am I, as I'm talking to you right now, a monkey?
Yes.
Right? Am I not human? That was woven in to all of this stuff. So when people tell me, well, you know, I don't see race.
Right. The color blindness.
That's right. The first thing that I do when I hear that is, you're dangerous.
Right.
Not, you're not a good white person. You're not, I don't hear that. I hear, you're dangerous. And now I need to, and my body starts to move into that protective. Even if I'm, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was going to say is to unpack that a little bit, because I'm just trying to pull this apart and talk. You know, people, they call that color blindness. And I think it was Conda Mason, who is at East Bay Meditation Center. And yeah, you know, Conda.
Yeah.
And that she, you know, she was talking about this to our group of mindfulness students in the training that I was doing, and why this was problematic. And that, you know, again, the intention versus the impact. And the idea that you don't see race or whatever that may mean, not only disavows you from having to learn more about the uniqueness of that person or their house history or their culture or what race or race differentials or, you know, skin differentials mean to them as an individual and as a collective, but it also, it means you don't really have to do that work to understand that, but it also, it doesn't enable you to see the uniqueness of that person's own.
Yes.
Like you're not seeing my race. That's like, well, but wait, I'm a mixed ethnic woman. If you think that I'm like Norwegian, that's a problem. Like I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, or if you think that I could just as easily be a New Zealander, that's a problem because I'm not, you know? And so the concept behind that, I'm like, I'm very precise about language when it comes to certain things, maybe it's my poetry background.
Yeah.
Are you trying to say that I would like to come from the position of knowing that there is an inner core, and as Dan Siegel even would say, a plane of potential or a possibility within each of us that is free of the construct of race?
Yeah.
Beautiful. Go into your non-dual teachings and your spiritual places, but let's not spiritually bypass to that.
That's it. That's it, sis. That's it. And that's why I think it's beautiful what you're doing with this podcast, is because I think that that's the genuflect in the healing field, right? The genuflect and the standard in the healing field is to bypass. It's to anything to do with race. You know, there's these all of these dodges. And so I think that these types of discussions and the trainings that we're doing, that you're doing and we're doing, and getting people exposed to it, so they can't, so you can dodge it if you want to, but don't act like ain't nobody said to you. Don't act like nobody has told you. Don't, you have made a conscious effort not to weave this into your practice, right? Because you understand that there will be suffering. There is, if you're going to go into this, like, I'm doing a lot of work. So, you know, Philando Castile, one of the things that happened here is that my work really took an uptick over the last 5 years because of a lot of the police brutality things. And it didn't just have an uptick because of the actual shooting. The actual shootings. It had an uptick because all of the people, all of the activists that are on the front lines doing this work, activating, many of them don't understand the trauma aspects of that. right? And so a lot of my work has been working with those bodies, right? Getting them to understand the activation and the settling, right? And beginning to help them create reprieve spaces, collective spaces. A friend of mine, Dr. Joy, she wrote a book called
Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome.
No. Just different Dr. Joy. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's another one that people can read, though. By the way.
Yeah. She wrote a book called Radical Self-Care.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she talks about how things like that we used to do in my community as a people is things like meal prep together, like on Sundays. My grandmother, everybody would go over there and start getting them food together for the week. And everybody would be in the kitchen. The kids would be out here and that reclaiming that piece. She also opens her house to wailing circles, right? To get at, because some of this stuff that shows up that feels so big can't be held individually, has to be held as a group. So she brings people together and have other people around in there leaning and grunting and wailing with the person and humming, right? It's so beautiful. And many practitioners that we know, sis, that are in this field have no concept of that type of stuff. None.
No. And what's interesting is that there are other practices that have been brought in. And Stephen Portis talks about this, you know, polyvagal theory and the nervous system regulation and beautiful man, beautiful contributions.
That's right.
And we'll talk about how, you know, use a clarinetist, how when you have a certain vibrational energy, right, you know, it helps calm the nervous system and engage the parasympathetic and all of that. And that these are sort of, You can learn that with quote unquote evidence-based practices and research and all of that, which I'm glad that he's done. Or you can do your grandmother's wailing circle and get together with your people and cry it out and hug it out and have that be your safe space.
And lean it out and vibe it out and grunt it out and smell it out and, you know, all of it, right? It's all of it. And so that's, I'm really appreciative of what you're trying to do because, you know, not a lot of people can put this out here like this. Because one of the things I think about this is that sometimes when we're putting stuff out like this, we think that, it's information. People just take the information. We don't realize how threatening this is. People take this and do really tight, really weird things with it. And whereas, like I just, and you know, because you've taken it, I just did this 5-day free e-course. So most of the feedback that I'm getting is like, oh my God, you know, and you know, you're saying things that I had always kind of had in my field, but you put it in words and now blah, 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 blah. And then there's other people. Then there's other therapists, right? Who this type of thing is so threatening and they can't unhook it from their protective responses. And so they basically went through all 5 videos overriding. Right? So they watched all 5 videos. And actually, the first 30 seconds of the first video, they left, right? But they watched all 5 videos, right? And so, I think what you're doing is important. And I also think for some people, they're going to hear this through a filter that is going to be so hard that it's going to be hard for them to lean into it. So, and that's cool, too.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not to take, as we know, with somatic experiencing, we do pendulation or titration. You know, I like to say, you know, we take a little bite and we chew and then we swallow and then we let it settle. We're not sitting there trying to eat the whole pie in one, you know. And I think that a big part of it, when you talk about the override, take in a little bit and then see whether or not you can tolerate just that little bit.
That's exactly right.
because honestly, it's a lot to take in and to take on. And like, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but Reverend Angel Kyoto Williams talks about, you know, like sort of none of us are free until we're all free. Like, and like, this isn't, it's, if there's an invitation and an offering to begin to explore some of this and recognize, as we do with mindfulness, the separation of the meaning making and somatic experience, you know, what's the narrative? What's the story I'm telling myself about this? And then, you know, what's the attitude, the Vedana? What is the, you know, feeling tone around it? Is it pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? Can I be with what's unpleasant right now, which is, wow, this is bringing up some stuff for me. I'm feeling a little activated. My nervous system is getting a little bit reactive. Can I breathe my way through it? Can I literally hit pause? Can I create a little bit of space and then take the next bite? Or do I need to just say, well, no, I don't eat that food?
Exactly right. Exactly right. So, yeah, it is what it is. I got to keep doing what I got to do.
I appreciate that. And I'm getting the sense that we're running out of time. Yeah. Can I ask you one more question before we go?
You can ask me any question you want.
Do you have time or not? Do you have another
absolutely,
five?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Well, then we're going to keep going for another 10 minutes. Okay. All right. I'm good then. I'm glad. You know, I want to go back to that because I just want to say, like, this isn't about blame. This isn't about shame. This is about accountability and responsibility, personal and collective. And it really, in my opinion, gets to the root of, like, wow, we're really in this together. And we see that with climate change. We see that with global warming. We see that with, you know, our neighbors, you know, and when we open to that and we see, frankly, that, you know, it's, you want to call it the Browning of America or whatever it is, you know, the census data. Yeah. Yes, of course, we're all, you know, we're all in the same soup. You know what I mean? We flavor one another.
Yeah.
And some of that's cultural appropriation too, which I'm not going to dive into. But this piece about discomfort tolerance and then comfort and then this idea of equality looks like oppression of people in positions of privilege. You know, can you talk a little bit about that?
So the way that I kind of frame it is actually two of my mentors, Dr. Davis Nourish and Dr. James Maddox, who's since passed. One of the things that they would talk to me about is this concept of clean pain and dirty pain. Right? And that clean pain is that pain, like as adults, many times what we want is we want the choice between pain and no pain, right? That's what we want. We want, so there's pain here, I want to have the choice of having no pain. And as adults, we know that the reality is that most of the time, we can't choose between pain and no pain. We have to choose between clean and dirty, right? We have to choose, we have to make a choice around whether or not we're going to go through something and it's going to be painful, or go around it and it's going to be painful. And I think what many of us do is make the choice to go around it. And as a collective and as a society that's built around white body supremacy, we have all of these dodges to go around it. And I think where discomfort comes in is that the moment there's any discomfort, the ability to develop tolerance to it is to actually hold it for a beat, not get rid of it, not immediately go to a yoga class, not immediately do some, you know what I mean? Just hold it to see what comes next, right? And many times we haven't built the structures or the crucible for those reactions to occur in. So what happens is that the moment that we start to experience any discomfort, we created these very elaborate dodges around it that look like healing, that look like social moving, and look like caring, but are actually dodges, right? And so really developing discomfort tolerance is really about, can you, like you said, titration or just bite a little bit, notice what happens. Can you hold it for a beat And can you notice if and when and how and what the texture of the shift is, right? And you may not, what you may notice is that you can't, and that's noticing.
Yes.
Right? And then the next time you go through it, and this is one of the things that I kind of talk about reps, right? Is that in white bodies, when I'm working with white bodies, because we do a community of practice, a lot of community practices around the country where white bodies get together. And one of the things that you notice is that because the structure is not built around them understanding race, and if you don't understand race, you don't understand nuance, right? That's why these kind of protective responses come up so fast. Right? And protective. And so what ends up happening is over time, if you can't hold it for a beat, then you can't build capacity. It is impossible to build capacity around this subject specifically, right? And so the part of the work is creating a crucible so those reactions can occur and that you get reps in. Like you work out, you do things, right? You know, the first time you do that exercise, it does not feel good. It is not, right? And so, but you go back to it again. And then you go back to it again. And then about, you know, a week or two later, you still experience the pain, but you don't experience it quite the same way you did at the first piece. And many times this whole structure, this whole society is built around white people never having to get reps,
yeah.
Right? The moment they start to get reps, they drop away. They collapse or they move in. Right, in these pieces, and they can't build it because they're trying to build it individually as opposed to co-create culture to hold it so they can build it out. And so when I'm talking about tolerance or discomfort, that's what I'm talking about. How do we get reps? A lot of the white bodies that we work with, I go, like, they say, well, this is just too much. And I always say, notice that the tonal quality in your too much is, I'm going to drop away. And what I want to say to you is this, I don't get that choice.
Right.
I can't drop away. So I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just telling you that when you drop away, know that you're walking away from me. Because I don't get that choice. And if you are in community with me and you love me and you all woke and you know, all that different type of stuff, and you walk away, you are supporting a structure in that walking away, right? From community, from work, from staying there with other white bodies and moving through this. And so you can do it and understand that it is not a benign choice.
Yeah, and I think that's so critical is that, like I said, I as a mixed ethnic, mixed race person, I guess I had been choosing walking away in many ways before. I didn't know, really. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that, again, is about safety and the, you know, sort of personal individual experiences that I had with my father in particular, but also with my father's side of the family and different, you know, languages they were speaking that I didn't understand and different, you know, skin colors. They didn't look like me. And it wasn't that I ever disavowed or disowned that. It was that it was associated and overcoupled through somatic experiencing language with trauma, meaning that there was. And so, of course, I don't want to, you know, dive in there.
Yeah.
But eventually, as I came to be able to have enough other inner strength through things like doing reps around mindfulness, doing reps around meditation, I should say, around retreat practice, around, which frankly started with being held in connection with teachers and communities that I felt where this was okay to try to do.
Yeah.
And not around the issue of race, just around the issue of my own crap.
Yeah. Yeah.
That started to open the door to say, ooh, can I unpack a little bit of this? Yeah. Can I go and look at this racial piece? And it doesn't mean that it's like perfect right away. Like I still have, I mean, I am I have my own biases and my own, you know, like, this isn't like it just goes away.
That's right.
But that's okay. So how do we hold it and then open up a little more space?
Right.
So, you know, it's like, I call it creating space for well-being.
Yeah.
And this piece about, you know, you talked about structure, about hierarchical structure, anything with hierarchy, implicit in that is oppression. Yeah. Anything in the collective, and we're sharing this space collectively, is sustainable. Mm-hmm. The oppression piece, or the hierarchical piece, whether it's, you know, the broader structured patriarchy, or, you know, as all the subcategories of the isms like racism fit within that, it's just not sustainable.
It's killing
our planet.
And we're seeing it, mm-hmm. right? We're seeing it. I mean, it's right in front of our face. Part of what I really try and get people to understand is that this is not about a cure. This is about, can we metabolize, and I really mean this, can we metabolize that energy that starts off as really raw and really protective and really, one of the things I say about heat is that heat can cook or it can burn. And right now, the heat that we have right now is burning, right? And if it cooks, you have to monitor it. You have to go in there and you got to taste it. Ooh, that needs a little salt. Let me put a little salt in that, right? And you, I mean, that's when I talk about reps, that's what I'm talking about, is how do you turn it up when it needs to cook a certain way? And then how do you turn it down and understand what needs to be in there, what doesn't need to be in there, and what things you need to add.
That discernment of the wisdom of knowing what to do or what not to do.
And that takes time. Yep.
Yes. And you know, again, to quote Ruth King again, she says, know when to bid or pass.
That's right.
Talking about playing
That's
cards.
It. That's
but
right.
Like, you're not going to go in all the way 24/7. It's not, right. We're not asking that.
That's right.
And you said 9 generations, you know, teacher, like I said, Jack Kornfield, he talks about, you know, one of his stories that he tells is about the 500-year peace plan. It took us, you know, we were in this civil war for so long, and it's going to take us 500 years to get out. The leader said, okay, fine. So it's, you know, but, and that's the thing, when you talk about reps, I hear practice.
Yeah.
Meaning that life is the practice. You know what I mean? But in a culture of perfectionism, which is different from discernment and discipline and commitment.
That's
it's different. You can do that. That's what we're going for. We want
that.
But perfectionism, no. I mean,
can't do it. Yeah. Good.
All right. Anything else you'd like to share with us?
No,
I mean, we could talk all day, but I don't think that's going to work.
No, I just think I'd really like people to go to my website, resma.com, resma.com, and check out the free video e-course. And I think that just a couple things about that is that make sure that you check your junk mail when you your junk and your spam folder, because sometimes it gets slipped in there. And then also sometimes you may have to switch your browser. But I'd really like for people to just join and go there, check it out, and then we'll keep having courses up there.
I really appreciate it. And you know, and everybody has to, like, you know, pick your lane, right? Like, if you're going to be the global climate change activist, great. If you're going to advocate on children, you know, great. If you want to do prison reform, great. But this isn't like, this is like, you can, I think, can weave this in.
That's
too.
Exactly. You have to. We have to. It has to be woven in, right? So, good stuff.
All right. Resma Menakem, the author of My Grandmother's Hands, Racialized Trauma, and The Pathway to Mending Our Hearts and Bodies. One of three of his books. Again, I'll have all the information up on your website, on our website, and just so appreciate your work and all you do. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you, sis. Thank you.
Take care.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What would you like to get off your chest right now? Are you feeling lonely, unappreciated, or misunderstood? When you keep these feelings bottled up, they can affect you negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and work through whatever is weighing you down. It's a great way to increase your self-awareness, change negative thought patterns, and more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/beherenow.